Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for February 20th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
We believe that it's because dolphins eat this high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet that they've evolved to have diabetes.
There are places in the world where these animals are treated in an incredibly brutal and inhumane manner.
There's tens of thousands of novel chemicals that have been identified from marine organisms.
This week, we're coming to you from the AAAS annual meeting in beautiful, sunny San Diego, a far cry from the blizzard-like weather we were having at home in Washington, D.C. last week.
No kidding.
Yeah, and not far from here, researchers at the National Marine Mammal Foundation are studying how diabetes may actually help dolphins survive. We'll tell you about that. We'll also talk to a researcher who studies dolphin intelligence.
Also, researchers are looking to the ocean as a source of new drugs that could potentially treat many diseases in the future. And we'll tell you about how your genes could affect your susceptibility to infections.
So, Suzanne, start us off by explaining how diabetes in dolphins could possibly be a good thing.
Since millions of people struggle with type 2 diabetes, researchers were really surprised recently to discover that in dolphins, the condition may actually be beneficial. Veterinary epidemiologist Stephanie Van Watson of the National Marine Mammal Foundation explains it this way.
We believe that it's because dolphins eat this high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet that they've evolved to have diabetes. That works to their advantage. It keeps sugar in their blood, which is feeding large brains, which they have just like humans. Insulin resistance actually helps keep sugar in the blood and getting to our brain.
She says that diabetes may have been favored in humans for similar reasons.
Way back when, during the Ice Age, people ate really high protein, low carbohydrate diets, and at that time, insulin resistance worked to people's advantage as well. If you look at Eskimos, their diet, previous to the recent years, is primarily fish and animal meat. So they have a very high protein, low carbohydrate diet. They have a very low incidence of diabetes. And it's believed that this may be because they have this insulin resistance gene, but they aren't eating the carbs to help bring it out and make it bad.
But she cautions that people with diabetes shouldn't just go out and eat more protein.
Because they may have kidneys that are more susceptible to be injured by eating lots of protein, believe it or not.
Ben Watson says understanding how diabetes works in dolphins could help lead to a cure for diabetes in humans.
There currently is no natural animal model that fully complements type 2 diabetes in people, and we're proposing the dolphin as the first possible true animal model for type 2 diabetes. Not only can we help humans, but we're really hoping to help dolphins as well.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. And other researchers at the AAAS meeting this week are studying similarities between dolphins and humans, too. Hunter College psychologist Diana Reese wanted to see if dolphins, like people, could recognize themselves in a mirror. Scientists use this as a classic test of self-awareness. And in fact, she has found that dolphins do recognize themselves. She says that dolphins marked in an inconspicuous place with a non-toxic marker race to a mirror and turn this way and that to try to see the mark in the reflection.
We've shown this in dolphins out of my lab, and then we've also demonstrated it in elephants. But monkeys don't show mirror self-recognition. Now, this is interesting because we're trying to figure out why it is certain species show it and others don't. Is it the brain complexity? How many neurons in a brain? Is it the brain size versus body size? Is it social factors or social complexity? So these are really intriguing questions for us.
In other studies, she gave young dolphins underwater keyboards. Each key would create its own particular sound and deliver a particular toy into the water.
And we found, to our surprise, that they started to learn the associations between the sounds they were hearing when they hit a key and the objects they got. They did it much more quickly than I expected, and they started to imitate the sounds and use them in what looked like they could be almost referential ways that they were somehow pairing, learning the associations between these sounds, much like we see in young kids, but they did it without us explicitly teaching them. So while I expected they would learn, I didn't expect the rapidity of learning, and I didn't expect them to acquire what may be evidence for really symbolic communication.
This level of thinking combined with self-awareness can be a key factor in deciding whether an animal should be given special rights, like a non-human person. Reese believes dolphins clearly deserve this status and need protection.
You know, as a scientist, you want to stick to your science and you want to try to maintain as much objectivity as you can. However, there are places in the world where these animals are treated in an incredibly brutal and inhumane manner.
In Japan, for example, dolphins are rounded up and brutally killed.
These highly sentient, highly intelligent animals that are aware of themselves and others around them and their circumstances are basically eviscerated alive and left to die an absolutely extraordinary death, seeing others around them dying.
She says the discovery of self-awareness in dolphins is one more reason to press for the end to such practices. Next, Suzanne caught up with a researcher who searches the depths of the ocean for possible treatments for a variety of diseases.
The ocean isn't the first place you'd think to search for potential new drugs, but with over 300,000 species of life in the sea, marine biologist Shirley Pomponi of Florida Atlantic University says it's actually yielded some very useful ones.
One of these is a drug called Prealt, which is derived from the venom of a cone snail that lives in the Pacific Ocean and that captures its prey by stunning it with a barb and injecting into it a toxin. That toxin from the cone snail was found to have many different chemicals, one of which is an analgesic. It's a painkiller. And the scientists who discovered this actually realized that it would be effective to manage pain in patients who are chronically ill, for example, with cancer or AIDS. The other drug that was recently put out on the market is a drug called Yondolus, derived from a mangrove tunicate or sea squirt that lives in mangrove environments throughout Florida and the Bahamas, the Caribbean, and even in the Mediterranean. And that drug is used for treatment of soft tissue sarcoma, a particular type of cancer. It is also being evaluated for treatment of other types of cancer.
She says these are recent additions to a list of pharmaceutical agents that have been derived from the sea.
A drug that probably most people don't realize was derived from chemicals in a marine organism is a drug called Zovirax, which is in an ointment that's used to treat herpes infections. The active component of Zovirax is derived from a chemical that is produced by a shallow water sponge that occurs in Florida and was discovered in the 1950s by a couple of scientists from the New York Aquarium who were routinely testing extracts or ground-up sponges to see if they had any kind of pharmaceutical potential. There's tens of thousands of novel chemicals that have been identified from marine organisms, marine algae, marine invertebrates like sponges and soft corals, as well as marine microorganisms. And they're being tested and a variety of assays to determine if they would be effective in the treatment of a variety of diseases, cancer, infectious diseases, diseases of the immune system, inflammation, things like that.
Pomponi and her colleagues at the Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institute continue to search the ocean for other organisms with the potential to treat disease. But she says they balance this search carefully with ocean conservation activities.
We're working very closely at the collection stage to make sure that we minimize the impact on the environment. We don't want to damage the habitat. We don't want to deplete the resource. And we are very careful about getting permits so that we've got the permission of the host country that has control over their sovereign resources.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. In our final report from the AAAS annual meeting this week, correspondent Justin Warner spoke with a researcher who studies the link between genetics and vulnerability to infectious diseases.
It's well known that our genes can affect our risk of chronic diseases like heart disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's. Less well publicized, but perhaps equally important, is the interaction between genetics and infectious disease. Rockefeller University immunologist Jean-Laurent Casanova says one relatively recent discovery is that a single gene variation can make someone more or less susceptible to just one disease-causing pathogen.
For example, CCR5 deficiency confers resistance to HIV, or interferon gamma receptor deficiency confers vulnerability to tuberculosis. one gene, one microbe, whether for resistance or for susceptibility.
On the other hand, he says population-wide differences in resistance tend to relate to multiple genes. He says that understanding these nuances may help us fight disease better in the future, for instance, by creating new drugs that plug holes in our genetic defenses.
Thanks, Justin. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll be back in snowy Washington, and we will report on novel ways in which scientists and educators are communicating science to the general public, from using superheroes to illustrate the principles of physics to staging plays about the lives of scientists. Until next week, get your daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. And remember, if you have a science question for us, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win one of our brand new Science Update mugs. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.